My goal is to keep them in the second group. I know I've given up any hope that those that are in the first group, that anything that I could possibly do would move them to the second group. But let's try to save the ones that are in the second group, right? So from an ethical standpoint, this is an area where we have a lot of potential traps. Now, I know earlier today we've had some speakers on different ethical issues related to multi-party representation. Multi-party representation in the context of a family limited partnership or a family LLC is something that we have to be really careful about. Now, in my practice, we are very used to dealing with multi-party representation, but it is multi-party representation and acting somewhat as an intermediary under the professional rules as to spouses, right? So the vast majority, if not all, but the vast majority, well above 90% of clients that are married use a single estate planner for their work. That makes sense. You know, they're planning together. But it is multi-party representation, which means we as lawyers have certain ethical obligations in relation to what we share with those clients and how we discuss that with our clients. The way I always explain it to my clients on the front end is, we're working together and there's a circle of trust, right? And anything inside the circle stays inside the circle. So if one of you tells me something, just understand that I would have to share that with your spouse. Traditionally, and I tell my clients this when they're hiring me, traditionally the things that have been a problem are if one of you tells me about assets or debts that the other spouse doesn't know about, relationships or intents to divorce that the other spouse doesn't know about, or least but not last, children that the other spouse does not know about. That tends to be more of a husband issue than a wife issue, just for the record. Any of those things, if they're shared with me, I must turn around and share them with the other party if they're not already aware of those things, right? And so that's always built into any work that we do. But in the context of a family limited partnership, you add two additional components to that. The first is, are we representing the entity, right? And there are particular rules, some of the rules for professional conduct, 1.12, that talk about the representation of an entity, and that being distinct from the representation of the owners or members of that entity, or the board of directors or executives and all those things, right? But in our context, where perhaps I've represented the family in their estate planning for many years, and now we're putting together a family limited partnership, that distinction becomes much more difficult, right? Do I represent the entity or do I represent the individuals? I would say in reality, in most cases, because what we're doing is talking about how that will impact the clients on an individual level, we're probably representing those individuals. Now that becomes even more difficult and trickier if I'm bringing in another generation into this mix, right? A lot of my senior generation clients, they really want their kids to be involved in these discussions. And that's where I have to be very, very clear with, well, I am mom and dad's lawyer, and you might be here, and you might be involved in parts of those discussions, but I don't represent you, right? I represent mom and dad. And where that can become a problem, and I always hear this with my clients is, you know, this is our family lawyer in relation to this. You know, they think of it, when they say that, as showing trust. I think of it as a future problem, right? Because who do I clearly represent in this group? And so when we're going to have children in that group and have a discussion with them, a couple of things I think about is what role will those children play? And how am I safeguarding myself from ethical problems and making sure we're clear on this issue in terms of who I represent? In addition to that, keep in mind that if you're not clear on this issue and a conflict arises later, under the professional rules, you may be barred from representing anybody. So it's important to make sure that you've papered your file on the front end, that if you're going to have other family members involved and other family members part of these discussions, be clear as to who you represent and who you do not represent. I will always put in my engagement letters and in my correspondence to the clients, just to be clear, I only represent you. I do not represent, you know, Jim Bob, and I do not represent, you know, Sarah, or whoever the kids are that are going to be involved in these discussions, okay? I will also email them or have them sign a written disclosure that says, yes, I understand you're the parent's attorney, You're not our attorney. If we have questions about how this should work, we should get our own lawyer. Well, if we get those things in our file, I feel like we're probably in a pretty good position to be able to continue in that engagement. And I'll talk to you in a minute about what else we may want to have in relation to having those children in meetings or sharing documents or correspondence to make sure that we preserve attorney-client privilege. But I'll get to that in just a second. If we're in a situation where kids are contributing significant assets to a partnership or an LLC, and I will say throughout this discussion, I'm probably going to say partnership, because the vast majority of the time that I do this kind of planning, I'm using a limited partnership, what I would call an FLP, family limited partnership, as opposed to FLLCs or, you know, LLCs. There's some reasons for that, and I'll talk about that later. But the vast majority of the time, that's what I use. So I'll use that. But in almost every situation, that same analogy would apply in an LLC context. So back to the family members and who, you know, how I deal with, you know, their representation. If they're contributing significant assets, they should have their own lawyer, right? You know, and that's probably true for most of your business clients. For you, you know, for those of you that are representing one shareholder or one partner as they're forming an entity and someone else is contributing assets, you would expect that person that's contributing assets to have their own legal representation. Well, the same is true in this context. So an example of that, it's been a couple years now, I guess, but I worked with a family that inherited a significant ranch in terms of the value of the ranch. But the way it was inherited from different family members, and effectively the parent generation got about 3/5 of it, and then there were two children of that parent generation, grandchildren of the original owners.